Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Sunny Mary Meadow podcast. I'm your host, Liz Fidler, and today I have Lena joining me, and we're going to talk about edible flowers and some other edibles, not the fun edibles, but not that kind of edible. This isn't that kind of podcast. I probably could have an episode about something like that, but anyway, getting back to it, Lena.
Hello, Liz. Thank you so much for having me today. I am so excited to be here to talk about edible flowers and how we're growing them indoors.
Yeah. So where are you located? What's your farm name? Let's kind of start with that.
Yeah, a nice little introduction. So I am based here in the Midwest, Kansas City, Missouri. I was born and raised here. I am the chief farmer for Urban Bounty Farms. Today, Urban Bounty Farms is a family and woman-owned company that started in April of 2022. We set out on a sustainable journey of growing everything indoors, hydroponically, year-round. So our concept that we're really trying to prove is if we can take buildings that are blighted around Kansas City, turn them into small hydroponic farms for edible flowers, mushrooms, microgreens, cucumbers, herbs, and beyond, and create farmers out of our community and curb food swamps, because we've got food swamps here versus deserts, then we are solving three problems in one in creating a sustainable business for generations to come. And I have been championing that for the past 2 years.
What did you do prior to this? I'm just really curious, like, let's talk about how you got started in this. Like, what a cool concept.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I actually just left the corporate world in Q4 of last year. So when we began this journey, we still all had full-time jobs. We're not generational farmers by any means. So with a little bit of YouTube and a lot of passion and hours spent at the farm, we've been able to kind of learn, hey, this is what grows well hydroponically. Here's how you recreate outdoor conditions indoors. But in my prior life, I was an IoT product manager for one of the large telecom companies. And IoT stands for Internet of Things. It's just the coupling of software and hardware. So I would work together with companies to launch them and bring them to enterprise and government segments.
So no background on like growing and, you know, agronomy and seeds and any of that.
None at all. I actually still really applaud like the ground farmers, because that's something that I haven't mastered at all. And being able to see people yield like beautiful heads of lettuce and gorgeous flowers, it's astonishing to me to see the craft at work. But yeah, absolutely no background prior to this. I did have an apartment filled with around 400 succulents. So COVID hit and plants became my friend. So I knew that I had a passion for growing, but really didn't have the opportunity to make an impact in my community until my uncle turned to me on family vacation and said, you want to start a hydroponic farm? And I was like, let's go all the way in.
There's no dipping your toe in. It's cannonball.
Oh yeah, cannonball.
So how many of these farms, right? Like each building is now a farm, right? I mean, is that the proper term? That's what we're calling it, because that's what it is. How many do you own, or how many are there for your business?
Yeah. So right now we're standing in the old Eastheim Brewery, which is super rich in history to Kansas City. It actually used to be one of the first breweries that would like bottle beer out to the beer gardens right by the river market. So this building is very old, but we've turned it into a farm, and we lease this building. And within this building itself, we built out three small farms. And the real trick here is putting on your engineering hat and taking airflow from one room and pushing it into the other to create the right conditions for example, we take the air from the microgreens and push it into the mushrooms to make sure that there's fresh air for those mushrooms. That's cool. So we've got one farm here in the East Bottoms of Kansas City, and then we have a shipping container in Lee Summit. The shipping container is something that's accessible for everyone to buy today. It's a Freight Farm shipping container. They're a company out of Boston. They are really, I would say, pioneers in a plug and play shipping box container. I love to ramble the stats. It grows or it yields about 125 pounds of food a week, and it runs on 5 gallons of recycled water a day. So super efficient in comparison to, you know, what you may normally see.
So, I have questions. I have so many questions. like grow lights. What fuels this, or what, you know, the shipping container one, like let's talk about that one first.
Yeah. So there is, I think it uses about 160 kilowatts of energy a day, and everyone, based on your geographic location, it'll be different, but it costs us about $1,000 a month to actually run those lights. And I think that would be something useful for people to kind of know. We utilize two different types of lights, right? The red and the blue, but UV rays. And what we've really actually noticed with this building particularly is you don't need the biggest, most expensive 720 high pressure lights to grow food specifically. Mm-hmm. You just something that's going to give them enough light to grow.
So then who are your main customers? So you said that one is open to the public. People can come just shop at that one, right? Like neighborhoods
No worries. None of it is open to the public.
Oh, we do okay. I misunderstood.
Yeah. So this one is just a building that's kind of more in an industrial area. It's right behind the Rieger. If people are familiar with whiskey, they're a big distributor out of Kansas City. And then the other one is just a shipping container as well. But anyone that's listening on the audience today could go inquire to Freight Farms and be like, hey, I want a Freight Farm shipping container. So just from Forrest's perspective, we actually are order online only. And we recently parted ways with a third party platform provider that was supposedly farmer friendly. And they took the keys to our website per the terms and conditions. And so I am frantically in the back rebuilding that website on Squarespace, getting the domains connected, things that I used to work with teams at T-Mobile with, am doing myself. So it's part of being a small business owner. It's like, what hat are we wearing today?
Yep. So who buys the majority of your, so not just flowers, but you have some edible flowers, but it's a lot of greens and, you know, herbs and what are, oh, so many questions at once. Okay, first let's talk about what you grow. And then, there's the salad kits. That is beautiful.
Thank you. It's got a dressing, radishes, edible flowers, micros, specialty lettuce.
Yeah, so if you're listening on the podcast, she just held up like a plastic box of the salad mix and it looks delicious.
Thank you so much. We grew it all, you know, chemical free, but we primarily are working with restaurants. When we started this farm, we just expected that we were going to grow everything and build a website, and direct to consumer was going to go bonkers, and we were going to see orders all the time. That was totally not the case. And
that's what you assume, right? That's what we all assume.
Yeah. You're like,
you build it, they'll come.
Yes. I'm going to send an email campaign, the entire thing. And we quickly learned that we had to do something to get revenue in the door. Urban farming is very capital intensive. And so January of last year, I went ahead and I started knocking on grocery stores. We jumped into 11 grocery stores in the area, Hy-Vee, Sunfresh, etc., growing and providing microgreens, the salad kit that I just had shared with you, and then some herbs. What we primarily saw there is if you aren't going to tackle that with a distributor. It is very time consuming if you manage the shelves yourself, as well as distribute to 11 locations and maybe still have 10 restaurants to hit within that day. So where we are primarily taking our focus today is with restaurants. And that is primarily because it is a consistent revenue stream for us. We can grow to order exactly what they want. We can provide specialized crops. Some want pansies, some want marigold. And that is really where we're starting to see consistency today, as well as working with some of those bigger organizations, whether it be maybe a school district or a senior living facility too. They've got a lot of people that need to be fed, and it doesn't matter what age you are, young or older.
Yeah. Obviously you grow year round and you can manipulate the conditions that you're growing in. So is there much of a seasonality, or does the weather outside affect the weather inside, or is it like, nope, we consistently, this is what we grow 365 days a year?
We stick to the same garden plan unless there's a restaurant that has a change with their menu. So I would say it's consistently evolving, but there's a reason why, like Wendy's, for example, is taking their operations from the produce side and putting it into a greenhouse right there. They see the benefit of a longer cycle from a growing perspective and less worry about bugs and less use of pesticide. But to me, in reality, we still face struggles growing indoors. For example, my farm door, that the freight farm shipping container, was frozen shut for an entire week. And so I couldn't see my plants. I couldn't feed my plants. I couldn't seed anything new, couldn't transplant or mend to that. I also had a rabbit eat an electrical part, and then I had to repair the farm. So things like that definitely do occur.
Yeah. So what are a lot of the flowers that you see, that chefs are using, or what kind of edible flowers? The majority, I don't know, my podcast demographic, we talked about this before we started recording, but my podcast demographic is kind of changing. I'm hearing more and more of people that not just cut flowers. It's everywhere, from direct to consumer egg. It's agritourism, agritainment, maybe even just other small business owners that are like, hey, I want ideas for my business. And so, I would say it's heavily focused on people that are growing cut flowers or selling cut flowers, but there's other entities as well within egg. But like, what kind of flowers are people buying and eating? I don't garnish a whole lot. I don't think I'm my target customer. I don't love pretty things as much as, I don't know.
That's funny. Well, I think that's a really good point. People often look at edible flowers as a pretty garnish. And then you have the James Beard chefs that are like, I need the specific variety. This provides this flavor profile for the dessert. And they're so specific that you can just tell their craft is art, and they make food art. But really, I think the popularity for chefs from a variety perspective is marigolds, because they're able to spread a lot of petals across four plates, for example, versus if they were just going to garnish with a borage flower, right? That's not going to go very far. However, borage is super popular for the chefs that we provide to. A lot of them say it provides almost like a gusher pop in people's mouth. And I would say from a garden perspective, it blooms a lot once it gets going, at least for us hydroponically. So if you're looking to actually start selling edible flowers, I would think about, hey, what's going to have a lot of petals that can provide a lot of, that can serve a lot of plates, and what's going to create tons of blooms, because quantity here is going to be key for these chefs. They might go through 200 plates in an evening. And then a third aspect I would kind of look at is which ones like have sturdy stems and not really flimsy leaves, because if it gets put on a hot steak, it's most likely going to wilt before it touches the table. Those are a couple of pointers that I would say, but I think marigold, borage, pansy, nasturtium, I might have said that wrong, those leaves are more popular than the actual flower. They provide like a really nice peppery kick. So I'm seeing a lot of chefs asking for the leaves more so than the petals. And I actually met with another urban flower farmer that grows sustainably outdoors. So she's chemical free. She's able to sell them as edible flowers. She says that marigold is the leaves of the marigold is another thing that restaurants chefs are interested in. It kind of provides a pop of color on the plate. So those are a couple of things. But when you look at, hey, I'm a sustainable farmer, I'm chemical free, this allows me to potentially have a new revenue stream of edible flowers. Maybe I can, till up a small row and grow something here. Think about the people that you've worked with previously. Have you been a server in the industry? Do you know chefs that might be interested in that? And beyond even chefs, I would also reach out to the cocktail lounges and the bars. They create some really swanky drinks, and they always love to garnish with an edible flower.
Peddling perishable products takes planning. That's a phrase that if you've heard it once at this point, you've probably heard it a couple dozen times. Hey, it's Abby with Abby Graves Productions. You probably know me as the person who helps Liz make her podcast and helps her out on social media. Well, I'm here to help you out on social media now as well, telling you all about the Flower Farmer Template Club. Now, we all know that you have a perishable product that needs to be put into the hands of the people who want it most. And a huge part of that is social media. Do you want to be sitting there going, I don't really know what to post. I know I should post something, but I don't have content to post and I don't even know where to get started? Or do you want your content ready to go at the start of every month? The Flower Farmer Template Club is just that. What you get with the Flower Farmer Template Club is up to 15 templates for static posts that you can share on Instagram and Facebook, and they are totally customizable with Canva.com. It is so easy to use. You can swap out your brand colors, your preferred fonts, or even pictures from your own farm you can put into these templates. I have made it super simple, super straightforward. It's a post every other day for the month. It is so nice to have in your back pocket, especially for this upcoming busy growing season. You're going to have your hands full. Take social media off your to-do list by signing up for the Flower Farmer Template Club. We have more information on this down in the show notes below, or you can check it out at sunnymarymeadowcoaching.com/store.
So like finding the customer and then growing to serve them, I think is going to be one of the key takeaways for what you're doing, because it's such a specific thing. And we got to touch on this still, like what criteria it takes to be able to sell it as food, as edible. It's probably different in every state, I would imagine, maybe. But I think that, if the expense of growing the way you're growing compared to how I grow, granted, I mean, I really don't use any chemicals or anything either, but if I have a little bit of product loss and I've got plenty of room, I can grow in volume knowing that somewhat of self-insurance, right? If my entire row of snapdragons gets taken out, it's not ideal, but I've got other stuff that I can sell and, I would lose money, but not, whereas yours is, that's an entire product and inventory and grown specifically for someone versus
yes,
if you tried to sell it as stuff was blooming or ready to go and just having a plan for it.
There's a whole business model that you've got to really outline before you cannonball into a hydroponic farm or urban ag, if you are going to really try and grow beyond, your basement or maybe in your garage. And I think, Liz, you're like hammer on the nail. Sold before grown makes the grow cycle that much more critical. We've got to always seed 10% more of our overall garden plan to account for product loss. If not, I'm taking microgreens from the next week and I'll never get ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what does it take to be able to sell plants or flowers as food? In Minnesota, for example, I know that like for annuals, for cut flowers, we don't need a license, but for perennials, we do. We need a nursery license. So if I were to sell my extra hosta plants or something, I need a nursery license for that, but I don't need one for, you know, my cut flowers or anything that's considered an annual. But I guess I've never looked into selling my flowers to be eaten if they're edible. So what does that take?
I think beyond obviously no chemicals, if you're going to sell it to someone, we have a license to distribute, sell, and grow produce today, as well as a license for a commercial kitchen to provide these kits that I had kind of shown, which include the edible flower. So I think you would probably need to have some sort of produce license, or at least let your public health department come out and see your grow facility before you would start, you know, kind of going out and marketing to a restaurant. I know whenever we were working with the grocery store specifically, they had to send a sample to corporate of all of the produce that we were providing to them, which included that edible flower, to make sure nothing came back of harm.
Okay. So like the Kansas City Department of Health and, you know, that, yeah, to get certified there. Do you get inspected often, or just like getting that license?
So I've had to work with them consistently because where we're producing the balsamic vinaigrette, it, you know, keeps changing. Luckily, there's a ghost kitchen right next door that has about 13 other businesses that, you know, use that space. And so I'm able to utilize that space to provide that. But for example, we had the Department of Ag calling on us on Friday, and they were like, hey, we just want to come out and check the farms, provide your inspection report. Remember, it doesn't leave you, but it's for you to have. And they're friendly about sure they know exactly what is going on in your operations, which to me, that's completely fine. If someone can help me better put safety protocols in place to get me GAP certified, which is something that I'm really trying to do for Q2, more power to them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I mean, looking at it as awesome, you're going to come in and help me identify things that I can do better so that I can tell my customers that I'm doing a good job. Sweet. Come on out.
Yes, exactly.
Especially when you know that it's such a great thing. Like I was talking to a friend yesterday just about, like, she owns a business as well. And I said, you know, I have to pay sales tax because my sales have increased. The frequency which I have to do my sales tax is more often. And I'm like, honestly, like, I can't imagine doing like an annual sales tax and once a year having 12 months worth of crap to get, you know, my QuickBooks and getting up to date at once. Like, I know I have nothing to hide every single month, whatever. So like, if you have an inspector coming out, like, you know, you're not willfully doing anything wrong. And if there is something that you're not doing the right way, it's not unintentional, or it's not intentional. It's not, you know, so I think, you know, that might be something that would maybe hinder people from, oh, I don't want to do it because you got to get an inspection. Like, well, yeah, I don't know. Aren't you glad that your food has inspection? And I don't know. Yeah.
Yes. What? Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I remember the first day I was being inspected, I carried everything in a cardboard box, and they were like, drop the cardboard box next time. And I'm like, oh, it's the little things, but thank you so much. Cause I wouldn't have thought like a cardboard box was a problem. And they were like, please just keep it in a steel container. And I'm like, fair. You know,
exactly. And they're just trying to help you, and they want you to be successful. They put it this way: if they put everybody out of business, they wouldn't have a job, right? Yeah. Like if all of a sudden they shut everyone down, they'd get fired because there wouldn't be a need for them. Like, they want to help you succeed within reason. Like, you gotta do your part, but they want to help you. Yeah,
I could agree more.
How many employees do you have, or who works for you, or who's helping you grow all these things?
Right now, I am a one-man show. That could change very soon where I would have the opportunity to employ more people because revenue commitments significantly went up, as well as partnering with another group of people that care about growing food and eating food close to where it's consumed. So that would potentially provide me about 15 volunteers. But as of right now, I am just in a joint venture agreement with someone to partner up on growing the microgreens. There's a lot of microgreens and mushroom growers popping up everywhere. And I know I can't get as far as I want to by myself. No one understands the amount of hours, besides the listeners today, that it takes, that actually goes into running a farm, let alone hydroponic. You first clean for 3 hours and then you get to farm for two. Mm-hmm. So I think just telling people, hey, you can only do so much with one person, but know that you can scale up from there.
Yeah. And maybe that's, you know, that's not everyone's goal. Truly.
Yeah.
Like, some people are like, no, my goal is to have a business that I can run on my own and I don't have to deal with other people or whatever it might be. Honestly, it's so unique to what you want it to be. And, you know, everyone's definition of, you know, I kind of hate the word success, honestly, like, because it's so subjective. Like, is success a dollar amount? For me, no, success is not a dollar amount. It's what I'm doing with my time, like the flexibility of it. And if I can, at the end of the day, like we had this little conversation before we started recording, like I want to have time for my hobbies. That's my definition of success. Like I want to do this and I want to bring in revenue and I want to pay my bills, but like, I don't want to be so busy that I can't go for a run every day.
Yeah,
I get it. There will be days. There will be days. Like, and especially when you're just starting out in a business, but like eventually, no, I don't want this to consume my entire life.
Liz, I couldn't agree with you more.
So you took the leap from your corporate job to doing this, diving in or cannonballing in, like we said. So now you're looking at expanding into like volunteers or some other, you know, people to help do the other job, which I don't know if you've listened to my podcast, other episodes, and it's okay if you haven't, but I had an episode a couple months ago about productivity tips. And I talked about a few different books that I really recommend. And one is called Who Not How. And it's really helpful for like figuring out what to delegate. Like you don't have to know how to do everything, but you have to be able to identify who can help you and how you do that. Anyway, so that's a helpful thing to look at, but
it's very for me, especially like as I try to become a leader, any sort of experience, knowledge, tips I can absorb are more than I'm more than thankful for. But you know, from a next steps perspective, I really want to keep charging forward as an innovative farmer, you know, in the urban ag space that is growing fresh, sustainably grown food year round and build a brand around the salad kits that we're putting out and making available to everyone. I'll never try and be a restaurant or always be a chef at home, right? But I want to see these farms everywhere because there are so many buildings that aren't being used and we can increase property value if we can just prove that food can be grown close to where it's consumed.
Personal question. How often do you eat the salad kits?
Yeah. So I don't eat, I probably eat like the salad kit twice a week, not that often, but I eat a strawberry green star balsamic and broccoli microgreen salad 2 times a day.
Wow.
So before I started the farm, I didn't eat salad. I would call it like leaves and was like really turned off to vegetables overall. And this has like really actually grown to show me that like, oh wow, Chipotle does make you feel horrible versus like eating a chicken breast at, you know, with tossed salad. It's crazy.
So what kind of greens do you mainly grow in your salads? I don't think we talked about that. Is it lettuce? What kind of, like, what's the good stuff?
So what I'm really seeing success hydroponically with is green star. I'm getting 7-ounce heads. Another one is red oak, green sweet crisp, red sweet crisp tastes exactly like a Honeycrisp apple. So good. People love bib, like restaurants love a bib head. So we do the bib heads as well. Romaine is so much greener, or so much more green than what you would see at the store. It's crazy. And then we grow a bunch of different types of like superfood lettuces, like Swiss chard, red vein sorrel, bok choy, mustard greens, just things that are like nice to toss in with the salads too.
Do you grow, so like the marigolds, for example, like how many of those plants do you have? Like, because if one flower, one palm can serve four kids or whatever, like, I'm just wondering on volume as far as like, you know, and the more you cut them, the more they keep producing. So that's, you know.
That is good. And this is like such a great question. We have 88 panels within our cultivation system and everything's grown on a wall vertically. So like all of the lettuce heads are, you know, grown vertical. And we put about 15 plants on a single panel, and we have 10 panels total in the farm, and that gives us around 400 blooms. Mm-hmm. We'll find out this evening if we're going to go to 800 blooms, and then I'm going to be plugging in here inside of this farm to plant a whole bunch more pansies. So it's been actually really, it's so fun to see like how one room or how like one facility performs better than the other. Mm-hmm. This facility is a little bit warmer, so the warmer flowers do better here.
So where do you, are there a lot of other, like, is there another one of these in Kansas City that you know of? Is there, are they, you know, are they everywhere? Are they?
Yes. Yes. Kansas City is so rich with sustainable cultivators, like everywhere. It is so cool. I feel so excited to be a part of something in the Midwest that I think could be disruptive out to the coast. But to be honest, no, there's not someone that is doing, that is growing indoors like myself currently, but there are tons of mushroom growers. So there are indoor urban ag farmers. They just aren't growing the certain type of produce that I am. But there's tons of mushroom people. There are a lot of outdoor urban ag organizations in Kansas City. So mm-hmm. I would say we're definitely rich with that, but I never look at it as like, oh my gosh, there's so much competition in Kansas City. Like we mm-hmm. also have a lot of restaurants. There's so much business to go around. And if they pick to work with another farmer, look, they have an established relationship. Don't ruffle those feathers. Go call on someone else seven mm-hmm. more times before you get your yes. Yep. And that's it.
Exactly. And that's, yeah, just, you got to hear some no's before you hear the yeses. And like, yeah, I'm in that process right now of starting to meet with some area florists and trying to like figure out what they want me to grow and like coming up with a route or coming up with some ideas. And, you know, it's so funny because the things that you're stuck on, you know, I'm trying to figure out like the logistics. I'm like, well, I don't, you know, there's one florist and she's about 15 miles away. And I was like, oh, well, I mean, if she wants flowers every day, how much am I going to have to charge her? Like before I even approached her, I felt like I had to have all the details hammered out so I could be prepared. Right. Because that's, you know, and I don't want to waste someone else's time. Like she's a business owner herself. She owns a floral shop and some other things, but like, I was so set on like trying to anticipate any questions that she would have so I would be prepared. And so I was like, well, this is what I would charge her for delivery. Otherwise she can pick it up at the farm, you know? And I was so set on like trying to come up with that number. So I'm prepared and, you know, and then I finally met with her and then she's like, we literally have a floral truck and we do delivery. Like we're out by your farm every day anyway. Like we'll just pick them up. If you have buckets of Lysianthus, Ranunculus, Dahlias, she's like, I'll just have my delivery driver pick them up. And it was like, oh my God, here I'm anticipating like, oh, should I do it free? If it's over $300 worth of flowers, then you get free delivery. But then like now all of a sudden I'm going to have to just like deliver these flowers on demand, these buckets of flowers. And like, I only have part-time daycare in the summer and like just so caught up about all these logistics, but like I want her to do it. And then you just never know. And her thing was, Well, we have a floral truck that does deliveries. Like, they can just swing by your farm and pick them up. Like, oh, duh.
Wow. But like so much, I don't want to like anxiety, not, or so much, you know, thought built up around that. And so make my, yeah, I had a meeting with a wholesale produce provider today and spun all the questions in my head before, and we didn't talk about any of it.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, you want to be prepared. You want to, you know, be respectful of other people's times and all these things. And, you know, you want to go into it, but sometimes you just have to, I don't know, here we go.
And see what sticks.
Yes, exactly. So where can we find you? Where can we, you know, find you on social media? You know, other farmers that want to learn more about what you're doing. What else can we learn?
Yeah, we are primarily active on Instagram, and our handle is Urban Bounty Farms. We are in the process of rebuilding our website, but that domain will be urbanbountyfarm.com. I will make sure to announce that, but feel free to reach out to me if you guys have any questions about getting started on a small scale, getting started on a big scale, about the experience. If you want to understand, like, hey, what grows really well hydroponically versus what doesn't, I've grown some $300 carrots. Don't make that mistake. Don't do it. You know, so I'm really eager to help people. I see how important the mission to grow food sustainably is. And thank you so much, Liz. You're an inspiration, gal.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. And I hope that, you know, I hope that our listeners found this helpful and just little tiny bits, and figuring out, you know, what other farm hers are up to.
Yeah. Liz, thank you so much. This has been so cool.
Thanks for listening to the Sunny Mary Meadow podcast. I'm your host, Liz. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and rate us. You can find us on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook at Sunny Mary Meadow. Subscribe to our email newsletter at sunnymarymeadow.com. And if you have questions or comments or anything to say, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@sunnymarymeadow.com.
Flowers, flowers, we love flowers. Sunny Mary Meadow, they smell so good. sunnymarymeadow.com.